This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Gohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. I'm roaming the halls of the arena in the Wells Fargo Center at the Democratic National Convention on the fourth and final day. And while I was walking around, I ran into several delegates as well as observers, students. And I want to bring you two of my final interviews from the convention today. First, we'll hear from two young African-American women who identify as Black Lives Matter activists. They're also college students. And then we'll hear from two Native American activists who were co-chairs of the Native Council for Bernie Sanders. And they were both Bernie Sanders delegates.
Hello, my name is Deja Willis. I'm a senior student at Hampton University. And we're here for communications and photography.
Hello, I'm Hannah Carellis. I also go to Hampton University, rising senior. And I'm here today to watch the DNC events.
Yes, especially in this day and time, Black Lives do matter. And it's a very reoccurring issue within like the past, maybe like the past, actually it's reoccurring, just history reoccurring, and it's history repeating itself, and it's ridiculous how Black lives, like, we do matter, and it's being like treated like we don't matter, or other people are above us and we're below other people, and we're being stereotyped, killed, harassed for stuff that doesn't even need to be done. And I just think it's wrong and it needs to stop. And people are saying that all lives matter. Yes, all lives matter, but right now Black lives are being put at risk and putting, like, people are dying over stuff that shouldn't matter. Like, people are just doing their everyday thing and getting killed or harassed for stuff like that.
So how does that issue get raised at a political convention like this? Do you feel that the Democratic Party is taking that sentiment seriously?
Yes, I feel like the Democratic Party is taking it seriously. They're really trying to help us out, but I feel like it should be more of awareness. Like, everyone should be try to help and support us instead of like putting us down. I mean, I think this party is really doing a good job at that, and I think that Hillary Clinton will win and Black lives will start to matter to people once it's in progress.
I'll ask you this. The killings of, you know, Freddie Gray and Mike Brown and Eric Garner, all of those have been happening under President Barack Obama, and yet we haven't really seen any convictions of police, and usually there aren't even charges, but even when there are charges, like in the case of Freddie Gray, we haven't seen convictions. Do you think Barack Obama could have pushed the issue, pushed his Justice Department to actually take this issue more seriously?
I think that at the end of the day, Barack is doing everything that he can and wants to do for us. And I think that with him being an African-American himself, he's definitely helping us out a lot. But I feel like the system is going to do what they want regardless. Police officers are going to do what they want. They're taking advantage, some of them are taking advantage of their position, and it's not right. Like, they need to do their job and what they're there for and get the right people instead of harassing the wrong people.
What could Clinton do that Obama can't?
I would like to say she could hold the policemen accountable for what they're doing, because they're committing a crime. They shouldn't shoot people that are unarmed, even though they're doing the wrong thing that might not be legal. They should not be killing them with kill shots when they shoot at them. They can shoot them somewhere else, you know what I mean? So when policemen do commit these crimes, I feel like they should be held accountable and arrested.
So how come President Obama wasn't able to do that?
I don't know.
I guess my question is, does the political party, does the Democratic Party really, you know, I mean, it's easy to say Black Lives Matter, but what do you do about it, right?
Yes. I think that the protests are good and the awareness are good, but we really have to start checking the people that are being put into the systems and the organizations that are being placed out there to help everyone, because they're really, not all, but some of them are actually doing the wrong thing and purposely towards Black people, so it's just wrong. So I think that it all trickles down from the presidential system, but it all starts from the bottom and works its way to the top. So in that way, yes.
Are you guys pro-Hillary?
Yes.
Do you know of the time when she referred to young African American folks as super predators?
No, not really. I don't know, maybe.
No.
And her husband passed the crime bill, which ended up locking up more Americans, disproportionately people of color than any other president.
Yes, I was aware. I'm aware of some of this.
I wasn't aware, no. Now I know.
So let me ask the two of you this.
I do want to say, though, even though she might have done some things in the past that we might not all agree with, I feel like she's definitely a better candidate than Donald Trump. So
I think a doorknob might be better than Donald Trump.
So, yeah, either way, yes. I don't care.
Not a very high standard.
Not a very high standard.
Yeah.
Hillary. Just not Donald Trump. Democratic Party.
So do you think that your vote for Hillary Clinton is more about a vote against Donald Trump, or do you really believe that she is the best person for the job?
I believe she's the best one, and she's also very strong about women's rights and children, so education, all that. So, yeah, I'm pro-Hillary.
Yes, I think everything that she's doing is great. Her purpose, her reasoning, it's all good. So pro-Hillary and no Trump.
Did you guys think that Bernie Sanders would have made a good president?
Yes, I do think that. And this is my first time voting, so I'm very excited, and yes.
Ready also, same way.
So had Sanders been the nominee, you guys would have been happy?
Yes. Ready to rock the vote.
Woo! Yay!
Well, good luck to the both of you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Brandon Yellowbird Stevens. I'm from Oneida Nation of Wisconsin, and I'm a Bernie Sanders pledge delegate.
Burton Warrington. I'm also a pledge delegate for Bernie Sanders from the state of Kansas.
We are the co-chairs of the National Native American Advisory Council to Bernie Sanders campaign.
Now, one of the things that I noticed that was pretty remarkable about the Sanders campaign was that he seemed to go out of his way more than any other candidate to visit a lot of nations, to visit a lot of representatives, and he didn't get much press coverage for it. Is that one of the reasons why you were won over to him?
Well, for the most part, his ideals are parallel to the Native American community's ideals, and so naturally it really resonated with our communities.
Like Brandon said, that's not really what won us over. Because his ideals are so closely aligned with the environment and other things like that. And, with Native Americans, he didn't have to elevate our issues to that level. So he really cared. That's what won people over, is he was sincere. And he did things for a moral reason, not for political, playing the politics game.
Can you expand on the ideals that you said you felt resonated with you specifically?
With the communalism. Tribal communities, generally take care of themselves, and we also hold in high regard the environment, and so his environmental views on protection of resources and sustainability is something that we hold true in our communities.
Yeah, Native American people have, been discriminated, or cards have been stacked against Native American people for a lot of years, and he understood that, and so many of the issues he's fighting for were similar issues to what we felt. They may not have been the exact same issue, but they were very closely aligned in the same context.
So it didn't matter that he was an old Jewish guy from Vermont. His issues were where you really felt like the identity politics of who he was didn't matter as much as the issues.
Correct. As you start, he started really quiet in the campaign in the beginning. He didn't get a lot of media press and coverage. And so as we started learning about who he was and how long he's really been fighting this fight, we understood that this is something that he really believes in, and we didn't need to convince him. Like a lot of campaigns and a lot of other individuals, we have to convince them of our issues, where he was already there.
So he's not the nominee. What now for both of you?
We've been fighting for 500 years. The revolution didn't start with Bernie Sanders. It's not going to end with Bernie Sanders. He gave an enormous shot of energy and adrenaline into the fight for equality and for inclusion. And so we're going to continue on. 2018 is 2 years away. 2020 is 4 years away. When you look at things like, the Tea Party, that didn't start overnight, and it didn't happen overnight. So the revolution and engagement that Senator Sanders created and brought out of people, that's just getting started. This ain't the end.
So will you hold your nose and vote for Hillary Clinton?
Actually,
let me just ask you, what do you think of Hillary Clinton?
What we're trying to do with the campaign is making sure that the movement continues, and we still need to press the Clinton campaign and say, we need to make this movement progressive, and Hillary needs to earn our vote as well. At the end of the day, we know that Donald Trump is very dangerous to America, and so those are the things that we need to also keep in mind, but transferring over those votes from Bernie supporters, you know, they're very passionate. You know, they feel, you know, the burn, and is really making sure that we try and create that platform that they can really feel connected to the Clinton campaign by transferring those over.
So is she going to have to work harder to as you said, Sanders was already where you were hoping, you know, he would be on issues. Is Clinton the kind of politician that you would have to lobby?
Well, you know, one of the things with Secretary Clinton is she has a long record of public service. And I think that, you know, President Obama hit the nail on the head last night in his discussion. It was the first time that, I haven't listened to every speaker here, but it was the first time that President Obama said something of the sort that, you know, everybody can make mistakes, including Hillary Clinton. And it was the first time that things weren't glossed over. She's not perfect, and none of us are perfect. We understand that. And
I like hearing an acknowledgement of her flaws.
Yeah, because, you know, voters are smarter than that to gloss over things and act like nothing has ever happened. So, but she has a long record of public service, and you have to respect her for that. And someone like Donald Trump has a long record of service to himself. And it's very dangerous when you think about, you know, the number of Supreme Court justices that may be appointed or nominated by the next president. There's no question in my mind that Hillary Clinton is the candidate.
What about the fact that she, during her work as Secretary of State, pushed the fracking industry, you know, and so has President Obama, sadly, really been proponents of fracking, which has been such an environmentally destructive industry?
Those are some of the issues that we really need to come to consensus with the campaign, because there's a lot of environmentalists, but there's also a lot of natural resources on Indian lands. And so the exploitation of those lands through fracking is always detrimental to our communities, and it displaces our members. It provides no safety net for clean water. And so what that really does is give us something really big that we need to push to make sure that they understand that fracking isn't good in our communities.
And you know, as far as you know, fracking and where the party goes, you know, fracking didn't start the day that Secretary got the nomination this week. It wasn't the start of fracking, so that train's going to take a little while to slow down. Like I said, we're going to have midterm elections in 2018. We're going to have another presidential election in 2020. I think Secretary Clinton's very politically savvy, and she understands that if the Democratic Party gets behind it, it says no fracking. Things like, you know, no TPP, even though I know here they're saying she's against it. She's smart enough to understand where the party is and where the people are.
You think so? Because I'm not as convinced as you are. But I mean, just the other day, Governor Terry McAuliffe came out and said if when Hillary Clinton's the president, if she gets the chance to sign the TPP, she would sign it. And he's very close to the Clintons.
You know, I think she'll be held responsible for her actions if that's what she decides to do. You know, people, you know, can't sit on the sidelines and play Monday morning quarterback. There's going to be votes happening in 2018. There's going to be votes happening in 2020. You know, she's going to have to calculate that. And, you know, so far, I think she's done pretty good. Look where she's sitting.
So what about the issue of climate change? I mean, we don't have much time left to do something dramatic about climate change. And, you know, Bernie Sanders supporters had often brought up the issue of whoever's the president, the next four, probably 8 years, are going to be absolutely crucial. Do you think Hillary Clinton's going to do everything she can to get us off of fossil fuels and onto renewable energy? Does that strike you as being an important issue for her?
I think it'll be an important issue because of...
It is an important issue for you, but is it for her?
I think it will, because everyone's coming out. Everyone's, you know, especially with the, you know, the Democrats are really coming forward. A lot of the local or the district representatives are coming out and saying this is, especially being from Wisconsin, we're an agricultural state, and understanding that if we don't do anything, these cultural or these agricultural practices will, in 20 years, will be different, and we'll have a different climate at that point in time, and adjusting to that type of weather in 10 years.
Gentleman just looked at your t-shirts and said Free Peltier, which is a good segue into my final question for both of you, which is the mascots on your t-shirts. So you're wearing a Free Leonard Peltier t-shirt. Tell us a little bit about why that is an important message for you.
For me, Leonard Peltier has been spent almost, I think, 39 years in prison. The whole case has a lot of faults in it, including information withheld from his defense, coerced testimony. There's a lot of things that are wrong with it, and that always bothers you in a country that's supposed to be built on the law when the law isn't followed. So, we're asking President Obama to grant clemency, pardon Leonard Peltier. He's served a long time in prison, and there's been a lot of objective looks at the case, which things just don't add up. And, so we're out here, trying to bring light to that issue, because it's a really important issue for a lot of people.
Take a look at your t-shirt. It says Death to Mascots, and it's got the outline of a certain Washington team's mascot on it. Tell me a little bit about your t-shirt. And I won't say the word, because I know it's an extremely vulgar word that is that's really not to be mentioned.
Well, what the shirt is really representing is the fact that mascots give a very negative stereotype and marginalizes the contributions of Native Americans. And especially impacts our youth in schools, because we're less than 2% of the population. You're coming in a learning environment that your history is written out, and your contributions are minimized, and you become, in the historical documents and how you're learning, you're the enemy. You know, the West was won by the cowboys, and you become the enemy. So we have our young students in school learning in an environment that's not conducive for learning. So when you're a young Native American and you feel oppressed through education, those are the things that a mascot does, is really paint that broad brush and really diminishes the fact that there are 567 tribes in the U.S. with 567 different languages and histories, and that is sending the message to those out there that, you know, there's a lot more than an image for us. And if you really want to honor us, you know, name buildings after us, name universities after us, like they do with Dr. Martin Luther King. Do not name a sports team after us and expect it to be honored.
And I mean, they're naming the sports team after an epithet, a word that's a racist word, not even an actual name.
Yeah, and what it's really doing is they're creating the narrative about what they feel it means to us. And they're really taking our voice and saying, hey, this is an honor to you. You should take it as an honor, without asking us. And what they do with these bogus polls that they do, they ask people who self-identify as Native Americans and say, oh, they don't go to the reservations. They don't go to people who are in the communities like us and ask us, how do we feel? They'll go and ask this guy, right over here, and he'll say his great-grandmother was a Cherokee princess. And so that's literally what they say. And so those are the type of people they ask, and those are the people who don't mind. And what I'm really fighting for, and this what this movement is fighting for, is those students in those school settings that are learning those things that they should be ashamed, because they were the enemy through the course of history and the U.S. history.
I think when you talk about mascots, that's one of the reasons that I can't remember the gentleman's name who introduced Donald Trump and, was teasing, Elizabeth Warren about calling her Pocahontas and war whooping. That's the mascots in the way that this country is, kind of dehumanized indigenous people, like we're something other than humans. That's a reason that people think that's all right. I don't think people are necessarily have bad intentions. It's a lot of ignorance, and Education goes a long way. So history books in the schools, you know, there's a reason that, well, you know, people say Pocahontas. I mean, you know, he says Pocahontas like it's a bad thing, like it's a slur or a derogatory term towards, you know, Senator Warren.
Well, I want to wish the two of you best of luck, and thank you so much for spending this time with me.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.